Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where it is Election Day in Georgia, and the control of the United States Senate hangs in the balance. Will Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue win, or will John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, the Democrats, win? We don't know, but it will determine who controls the Senate for the next 2 years. Those are the high stakes, and if that's not dramatic enough for you, guess what? Tomorrow, the fate of the 2020 election gets finally resolved. It, too, hangs in the balance as more than 100 House members and at least 14 U.S. senators plan to object to certain states and their electors that are currently declared for Joe Biden. We don't know what that means. Right now, my own reporting indicates that there are enough votes, Democrats and defecting Republicans, to approve Joe Biden as president and in the disputed elector states. However, on our shows, on the Just the News TV shows yesterday at Real America's Voice, my good friends at Real America's Voice, we had Jenna Ellis, one of the president's most important campaign attorneys, and here's what she said. She said there is an idea that they have divined that they believe is completely constitutional, completely legal, in which Vice President Pence decides to count all the votes except for the six states that have been in dispute. And he goes, and instead of counting those votes or opening the electors' envelopes, he simply goes and says, I'm sending these back to the state legislators. The state, six state legislatures. And let me give you the states: Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. And says, I want you, the legislators, because you're the constitutional power that declares electors, to tell me, given all the controversies in your state, given that many of your legislators have written me, the vice president, saying they doubt the results that have been certified in their states, which slate of electors do you want chosen? Do you want Joe Biden's electors seated? Do you want Donald Trump electors seated? And give them a few days, certainly well before January 20th, Inauguration Day, to inform them of the decision. And if the states give them a decision, Mike Pence will follow the will of the legislature and count them. And if they don't, those states won't get counted. And the question will come down to, will there be enough votes for anyone to have 270 electors on the day they resume? And I think Jenna Ellis suggested that they would have this resolved by January 17th so that Joe Biden or Donald Trump would know who's going to be in office on Inauguration Day, the 20th. That's an interesting idea. It is a Trump campaign legal idea. It is not yet the will or idea or embraced idea or execution strategy for Vice President Mike Pence. Here's all we know right to this minute. Mike Pence has issued a statement through his Chief of Staff, Mark Short, saying that he supports those legislators, those members of Congress in the U.S. Senate that are going to object to certain slates. He thinks that there's a needed debate on the integrity of this election. He's going to welcome it. That's all he said. He hasn't said what else he's going to do. Now, what do we know about Mike Pence? Historically, he has been a strict constitutional person. They call him a strict constitutionalist. Does not try to interpret, stretch the Constitution. Tries to read it literally as it is written and follow it. He keeps that copy of the Constitution in his pocket at all times, as I remember from days he would come visit me at the Washington Times when I was the editor-in-chief. He'd have it in his pocket. This is a man who loves the Constitution. I just don't know. I've talked to lots of lawyers, or some lawyers that said, I could see that working. Other lawyers saying, I just don't believe the Constitution gives him that authority. We don't know yet, but that is what has played out over the last few hours. And guess what? President Trump today tweeted out a little bit of a tweak to his vice president, his right-hand man, Michael Pence, saying Mike Pence has the ability to reject the fraudulent votes. Now, again, that's in dispute, whether they're fraudulent votes, whether there were irregularities. There are a lot of proof of irregularities. Certainty of fraud is a little bit less uncertain, but there are certainly court-certified instances, at least in Wisconsin, where 200,000 votes are now in question by a Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling. You don't hear that from the mainstream media, but that ruling exists. We wrote about it. We let you read it on Just the News in the dig-in section. There are other places where there are suitcases under tables on videotape. We don't know if that's a normal process or it isn't. I think a lot of people don't think their ballot should be stored in suitcases. We know in Georgia that 36 voter machines were cracked open early and their cards taken out early. We don't know why. So there are irregularities in these very specific states. We had Jesse Jacob, the whistleblower in Michigan, in the city of Detroit, talk about not a day or two of fraudulent activity, but an entire month of fraudulent activity in the city of Detroit. So there are real irregularities. Now the question is there anything constitutional that can be done about it? So we're going to do two things for you today. First, we're going to get one of the members who will be on the floor tomorrow objecting to certain states' electors, Devin Nunes, the former House Intelligence Committee chairman, the California Republican House member, and the most recent, and when I mean recent, I mean yesterday recent, recipient of the Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor an American get. He was awarded that yesterday by President Trump. He's here. We're going to talk about the medal because that's such an amazing opportunity, and the very cogent words he said about the failure of the news media in America to be honest brokers. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to ask him, what is going to happen tomorrow on the floor? We're going to get a firsthand account from Devin Nunes, what he thinks will happen, what he's thinking, what he himself is going to do and why he's doing it. We're going to get that. And then I want to give you a different look at some of these irregularities and questions. And so we have a group of military intelligence analysts, people who were trained in the service of our country for intelligence or military agencies, who've gone through the raw data of the election in the six states, the data that the secretaries of state made public, used, and they're going to give us their best analysis of what they see. They see things that haven't been reported, and this isn't from some media outlet or from some videotape that's a suspect. These are official data counts from the states, the six states that we've been talking about, and we're going to have two members of the data integrity group here in just a second to talk about what they found. So we're going to go right to commercial break with two interviews. We want to get as much time on this interview, so I'm not going to do a long monologue. You've got the latest news with these two historic days coming up. Georgia settled today. The presidential election settled tomorrow. We're going to have some pretty big players on both here to talk about it over the next few hours. But first, let's go hear from our great advertisers and sponsors, the people that make this show possible. We love them. We support them. If you want to help Just the News and John Solomon Reports keep growing and getting better, then by all means, please support their products and services. When we come back, first up, Congressman Devin Nunes, the former House Intelligence Committee chairman, the man who unraveled the Russia scandal, the most recent recipient of the Medal of Freedom, and a man who'll be on the floor objecting tomorrow to some of the election results from 2020, the November 3rd election. He joins us, Devin Nunes, right after this commercial break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, a man who just got the highest civilian award you can get in America, Congressman Devin Nunes, the latest winner of the Medal of Freedom, is here to join us. Congressman, congratulations on your award yesterday.
Well, John, thank you very much. And I would like to say that this is it's an award for the people that I represent, and also an award that you'll be very familiar with, the staff that was on yes. our Russia hoax team, and also the Republican members on the Intelligence Committee, because you know, we were attacked for so long.
You
so
were.
It's really phenomenal that the president gave me this great award, but I think this is one of those cases where really it was a team effort, and the team deserved the award. I just happened to be the guy that was in charge of that.
Well, in an era where you hear lots of me and I in politics, I never heard any me or I yesterday. You were talking about other people, and then you turned to a subject that I think is so important, and that's the information warfare era that we're living in. What inspired you to talk about this alliance between the intelligence, law enforcement, and news media and Democrats? It's a great opportunity to have this public stage for a moment, and you really showed a real deep concern for America being disserved by this alliance of disinformation. What inspired you to do that, and what's been the reaction to it?
Well, a lot of Americans are saying, what now? What's next? Why aren't these people going to jail? And so I wanted I tried to make the point yesterday in my public remarks that were essentially that for a democratic republic to survive, you have to have faith and trust in the institutions from all sides, the majority side and whatever the minority sides are. So whether that's, you know, having faith in your election system, having faith in law enforcement, having faith with judicial decisions, people have to know that it's that win or lose, that it was done fair and equally, and every American was treated the same. And that's what's collapsing before our eyes, because these institutions are failing us. Whether that be several mini government agencies that we unraveled in the Russia hoax that were involved in this, but also the political operatives are always going to be political operatives. But to make up fake information and feed it to the FBI and have them take it up—that's one thing. That's bad enough, but it's also equally as bad that the media, which is supposed to be, it's a very important institution here in the United States to have a free and fair press, but we don't have that, because one thing that was proven in the hoax, the Russia hoax, is that the media were in on this deal, and they and you know this, John, they had to have known it when they got
when they
received the dossiers, the versions, you know, the different. Every 2 or 3 weeks they were, you know, new dossiers were circulating all through 2016. Now, no one that I've been involved in intelligence for 10 years. Okay. I would say, you know, maybe my first, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months of reviewing intelligence and getting briefings, would I have maybe been gullible enough to take these goofy dossiers? But I don't even think that's the case, right? Because I think I would have got the dossier and I would have said, Prague, well, this is easy. Was Cohen in Prague or not? I mean, this is a simple call down to, you know, what's the passports and, you know,
simple validation.
Yeah, I've never been in simple and easy, easy stuff that could have been done. So it's just the collapse of institutions, whether it be the media, the different government and the different government agencies. And then, of course, you tack on top of that the Silicon Valley tech tyrants now, and their ability to censor. So it's very, very concerning to me. And so, you know, I'm very grateful for this recognition that I say we received, meaning our whole team. But also I'm very fearful that justice is not going to be served. And the people that run these institutions aren't actually owning up to the degradation that's happening in our country.
Yeah, I think that was the most poignant thing. The idea that what we've allowed to become acceptable is misinformation warfare. And you really made a very cogent point in the speech about that. I wrote about it last night. A lot of people have been talking about it. I've seen a lot of action on Twitter. I think you hit something that's in the core of a lot of people's minds. And of course, your speech yesterday, which took on the media and called them to own up to their failures, comes just less than a week after Gallup had a poll showing that all-time high Americans distrust the media, including 30% that say they don't trust anything that comes from the news media. Never been that high in American history. So the American people have the same concern as you. You can definitely see that.
And I should say, though, I did have a little line. You probably, I don't know if you saw it or not, because it was only one line, but I did put in there that, you know, there are a few reporters that are actually trying to get the facts. So,
yes, yes.
So I wasn't... But you know, it truly is very few.
It is true.
When you look at it, you know, you were one of the ones that helped to get to the bottom of the hoax, and you know, we couldn't have done it without you. But there are probably less than 20.
You're right.
And I'm even talking
shocking.
About, and I'm, yeah, there were probably less than 20 that actually tried to get to the bottom of the hoax. I mean, that's really, really scary.
Yeah, I know it is.
Really, really scary stuff.
It's a surrender to the truth, and we don't, or surrender to falsehood, and a running from the truth that scares me so much. But I think American public pressure will, over the long haul, begin to move that there. I want to turn to tomorrow. Tomorrow's a very big day with the certification. Where are you? What are you going to do tomorrow when it's your time to vote on these states? What have you decided to do?
Well, we had about a two-hour meeting this morning with House Republicans. The challenge is going to be to get everybody on the same page.
Right.
So there's no one that disagrees that there was fraud. Now, the question is really coming down to, is it constitutional or not? And
right.
I think so. You've got some people who are saying that this isn't constitutional. On the other hand, you have folks like me who are saying, look, I just have basic questions that I want answered. And one of the simple things really is these suitcases coming out from underneath the table and being loaded up and then processed after everybody was asked to go home. Now, look, that could be totally normal. And it's been explained as totally normal. But what I saw over the last couple of days, you had the Washington Post leak out a phone call that the President of the United States had with the Secretary of State of Georgia. Now, that's bad enough that the phone call will be recorded and then leaked. But I would say secondarily, the concern would be that you've got I listened to that recording. And of course, everybody's focused on the president said we only need 11,000 votes. Well, that's just common sense. And then they say, oh, it's impeachment. It's Watergate. He's threatening. Well, yeah, if you actually listen to the whole tape.
Yep.
And I actually listened to the whole thing. The president was very, very clear on something, and that was, Mr. Secretary, and I'm obviously just paraphrasing here, tell me what happened with the suitcases. Tell me what happened with the ballots. And I would say it was a non-answer. He wouldn't answer the president. So if you have the Secretary of State of Georgia talking to the President of the United States, who's asking a very basic question. Hey, there's videotapes of ballots, being come out. What happened? And if your answer is, well, we've looked into that. Well, look, I'm from California, and this is where the constitutional issue comes in. But, I'm sorry. I want to have some type of answer to that question.
Yeah.
I want to know, who were the people? Have they been interviewed? Did the FBI look at it? What were those ballots? Because look, we know this much, and in just a handful of states and a handful of counties, you had basically Donald Trump go for hours and not receive any votes.
Right.
And so, I'm not saying that I know 100% that it's fraud, but I'm saying that's very unusual. And what would make me feel a lot better, and most Americans feel better, is if we actually knew the damn answers to it. So, I'm looking at this myself, state by state. Obviously it's going to take, there'll be several states that members of Congress are going to object to.
Mm-hmm.
The question will be how many will there be a senator object to?
Right.
And I think people have to understand this is going to draw attention to this issue, but ultimately, the votes aren't going to be there in either the House or the Senate to change this. But I do think it's an opportunity for us, for Republicans, to make a stand where we feel we don't have sufficient answers.
So for states where you don't see enough answers, you are going to vote against certification for those states. Is that correct?
That's correct. And hope that we'll have a debate on that. So maybe these
get the answers.
Get debated and there's a record of it.
Yeah.
I doubt we'll get the answers if we get to debate, but at least there will be, a case made so that down the road, we have the something in an official record.
Right.
Because right now, the courts have essentially, they've refused to even hear evidence in these cases.
Yeah.
Which is prepossorous to me.
Right. There hasn't been a hearing of the actual evidence.
You can say there's been, and I know, look, there's been a lot of complaints that there's been too many cases filed and some of them weren't done the right way. But come on, many of them were done the right way.
Right.
And for the courts just to basically reject these out of hand, I think is a problem. And look, everything we've been through over the last 4 years, knowing how they're willing to corrupt the FBI and the Department of Justice and our intelligence agencies and everything else. Look, it's just sad that as a top Republican on the Intelligence Committee, that I can't answer the questions on whether or not there was fraud or not. That's not acceptable. Nobody should think that's acceptable. I get the constitutional arguments that, you know, we're stepping into the state's lanes. I get that. And look, California's a disaster. I don't want anybody to have the system that California has, but the American people got a taste of that this year.
Yeah,
where everybody gets mailed a ballot, you know, and it just leads to lack of trust in the system when it takes a month to count the vote.
Yeah.
And that's what we had in many of the tight swing states.
So important. Last question, because I know you got to run to a vote. Do you think there will be more declassifications of Russian information? There are still big questions remaining that we need to know, particularly the nexus between Hillary Clinton and her email case and the start of the Russia case. Do you think there'll be more declassifications before January 20th?
I don't know. I mean, we're still pushing. We have quite a few documents that we'd like to get out.
Right.
One thing I am, you know, saying to people that, you know, this is not, you know, there's not a lot left there that people don't know about, that people aren't aware of.
Right.
But we really need, but if we don't get it out now, it's probably never going to come out. And then, of course, we you know, everyone's waiting on the Durham investigation. And so the hope is that Durham's going to be able to finish his work. And I know a lot of people have doubts about that. I still have confidence that Durham is trying to do a thorough job. I think he's got a stellar track record from everything that I can see. And I think that, and I've never spoke to Durham, but of course, you know, we know people that are, you know, we know people that have, that are, you know, witnesses and been interviewed and that sort of thing, because there are witnesses in many cases, right? So
there's
people that are sharing information with us, that I know that it seems like, you know, the DOJ is over the target. But look, we still haven't seen the indictments yet. And I think that's what people are waiting for.
That's the ultimate accountability that's been lacking all throughout. Well, sir, I know you need to run to a vote. I want to thank you so much for spending the time and all you've done for this country. And congratulations on the Medal of Freedom, a well-earned honor.
Thanks a lot, John. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break here from our great advertisers and sponsors and be right back with our next interview with the former intelligence experts of the Data Integrity Group. They've done some interesting analysis of the vote totals in the key disputed states in America. We're going to hear from them next. But first, these messages from our great advertisers and sponsors. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, not one, but two very special guests two data experts that are part of a group formed called the Data Integrity Group. This group surfaced about a week or two ago. They've been doing old-fashioned data analysis on the Secretary of State vote feeds in those six disputed states, and they've come up with some amazing findings. I mentioned a little bit of them in the beginning of the show, but they're here to tell us firsthand what they found. And joining me right now is Justin Mealy, 9-year veteran of the U.S. Navy, worked in the electronic warfare technician area as a cryptologic technician and as an Arabic linguist protecting our country. He also worked at the NSA as a mission manager, somebody on the front lines of data and national security. Justin, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, John.
And your colleague is here as well. And what I like about you two guys is you're looking at this data from two perspectives that have highly trained data backgrounds. And Dave Labou is the second one joining us. He is currently getting a master's degree in data science, but he had 12 years in the financial sector doing analytics for places like Viasat, GE Capital, and Cantor Group. So these are big investment firms. They need data they can rely on so that they can make their multi-million and multi-billion dollar investments. So a national security expert, an investment data expert joining us. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having us.
I have been fascinated by what the Data Integrity Group has done. It's just plain old-fashioned, neutral presentation of facts, the way that a investment manager or an NSA director might need. And you went through, if I understand correctly, the Secretary of State feeds and the county feeds in these six states and found some pretty compelling, irrefutable things that had happened. Listen, we may not know why they happened yet, but we know they happened. And so why don't we start with your sort of your top three findings? You have three pretty clear examples of data irregularities. What is someone who's not a data expert take away from what your original work has found?
Sure. Yeah. This is the analysis we've been working on. Just to give a little background too before we go into the main points about it. It's a structured analysis that we have combining data engineering, statistical methodologies, and synthesizing these types of approaches to get derived insights from what we found in these multiple data sources. And essentially the summation of what we've found is that there are these irregular patterns in the database for the election voting system that have yet to be explained and are irregular in terms of how election data should flow and is supposed to flow. And it would also be inconsistent with anything that we've seen from a corporate data structure, small, medium, large enterprise. To boil it down, basically what we see happening behind the scenes with vote data should not happen. And if it were happening in the financial sector, more or less all of these assets would be frozen. They'd be investigated more thoroughly and nothing would be proceeded until the root cause of these types of discrepancies were realized. So that's sort of the high level main point. I think we can talk to some of the specifics, but I'm sure Justin will add a little color beyond that.
Yeah, let me ask you, Justin. Okay. I mean, you were giving advice to the NSA, to the Navy. If you go to one of your captains in the Navy, you go to one of your supervisors at NSA, how solid is this data analysis that you've done? Would you be willing to tell a captain in the Navy, I trust this data, or an NSA supervisor that this data is actionable to take the next step? How good is your analysis?
Well, absolutely. So, one thing about that is that that's a very, very big important part of writing an intelligence report is you have different levels of certainty about the information. You have to let them know exactly to what degree you understand that data to be correct and that they can form these kind of conclusions based off of those premises, right? So with the data that we have, it is the same data that these states certify with. And that's a really, really important part. So when you have anomalies in data that the state certify with, you're saying that the state is certifying anomalous data. Now, that's the thing is, we're kind of in this position where we believe that our goal here is to just say, look, we found things that some need to be investigated. Some are great indications of fraud, and there are no answers, And our point is not to say necessarily who did what, something like that, but just to say that if you don't investigate these – then you're leaving all these unanswered questions about things that affect every aspect of our lives. You know, how we get taxed, who does what. I mean, it's such a big thing in our lives, and yet no attention has been paid to what we actually need to do in order to know that this is a certain election, you know. And the other thing is that, you know, if you can kind of boil it down, is to say that basically there was fraud in the data, and that the nature of the fraud, you know, if I can kind of say it like this, the nature of the fraud means you cannot trust the results. You can't say like, oh, well, this candidate, it looks like he lost by 1,000 votes, right? You can't really say that because you're looking at post-fraud data. You're looking at post-process data, if you will, you know? So if you run, you know, sort of the process all the way through, well, you can't go back from bad data to good data. You don't know what the original totals are.
Yeah, once it's polluted, right.
Exactly. So that's all we're saying. We're not saying that, you know, oh, well, this candidate actually did win over this candidate, even though the totals are different. We're just saying that the data is so polluted that there's no way you can tell us with any degree of certainty what actually happened. We don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. So let's take one that caught my attention, because this is something I've been reporting on since, believe it or not, Dallas County in Texas in 2018. I looked into a case in Dallas County where the machines kept kicking, I wouldn't call it an error, but an adjudication request, and then a supervisor would have to manually decide which way to count the vote. And so you found this in Georgia, where for the first time they're using Dominion voting machines. Again, not accusing Dominion of anything, but you found significant evidence of supervisors having to regularly adjudicate and decide which way to count a vote. Tell us what you found in that.
Okay, real quick, you know, the interesting thing about adjudication, first of all, you know, I kind of like don't like the word adjudication.
Yeah, it's a bad word,
isn't it? In the news. Yeah. I mean, what does it mean? And, you know, really what it means is change of ballot. That's what adjudication means. So all you're doing when you're adjudicating something is you're just making sure that you're just changing a ballot. Now, the idea is having, you know, a Republican and a Democrat and possibly an independent there. And then they all look at that thing and they change it to what the voter actually intended to do. You know, maybe that ballot was waterlogged, you know, or, you know, maybe they circled something here and put an X here or something like that. They're supposed to determine that intent. But the problem that I have is, you know, specifically in the case of Georgia, you literally have a person who is in charge of the election there saying that 113,000 ballots were cast, 106,000 were adjudicated. Okay. And that, first of all, that interview that he gave was one day later, right?
Right.
I believe it was one day later.
So what county is this? Are we talking about?
Fulton County, right?
Okay. So the big one, Atlanta.
Yeah. Richard Barron, Fulton County. And so he said, he gave those numbers, and the key number there, 113,000 ballots cast, 106,000 adjudicated. Well, if you were to adjudicate ballots, you know, we interviewed all these adjudicators, and we were asking, you know, about how long does it take to adjudicate a ballot? And the number that they gave is about, you know, typically it could be like 5 minutes, could be 10 minutes, but sometimes it's like, it says, you know, it could be fast. And I said, well, what's the fastest you can adjudicate a ballot? And they said, about 30 seconds. You couldn't really do it faster than 30 seconds because you imagine you're looking at a picture on a screen and you have two people and they have to come to an agreement. It takes at least 30 seconds to come to an agreement, right? So we said, okay, well, that's about two per minute. And you have 106,000 ballots, right? That's about 53,000 minutes, which comes out to about, I think, like 883 hours.
Right.
So 883 man hours would have to be spent. And if you had 883 man hours, well, then, you know, think about how many teams you would need to run in order to do that in one day. The thing is that we don't have any record of this county doing that. And that's doing the perfect 30 seconds for every single ballot. That is the absolute perfect you can do. Them doing it 24/7 and doing it in one day, it's physically impossible to adjudicate that many ballots. That's what we're saying.
That's a red flag. Just common sense. Listen, you don't have to be a data scientist. Once you explain it that way, it is, you know, common sense that they couldn't have possibly done a good job on adjudicating if they had that many. And again, you're not making up that number. That's the official number that Fulton County gave the public a day or two after the election. All right, let's go to another one that I think is interesting. It's caught my fancy. I think it caught the president's fancy last night. In Pennsylvania, you found, I think, 400,000 errors, Justin, am I reading this right, across the state that for which there isn't yet an explanation, meaning a machine kicked an error, and we don't know why. Am I reading that correctly from your report?
I can clarify that one. So this was sort of one of these system-wide identified flags we had in our sort of structured process I mentioned earlier. So as we, you know, took a look at this data, we did the typical data processing where you're cleaning, you're merging, you're joining across data sets to make sure all of our timestamps, the values, the candidates are all aligned so that we can sort of take a broad, you know, if we want to take a close look at it or a 30,000 view, we've got it all structured and aligned. And what we saw in Pennsylvania, again, for reference, we didn't see these types of anomalies 100% across all states. There were a select set of states that exhibited these types of patterns. And specifically, when you look at, you know, the five or six that have been in question, just the relative scale of these types of issues or errors we identified in the system were much greater magnitude. It's localized in these areas. So within Pennsylvania specifically, what we were able to, you know, discover by, you know, these analytic processes is that there are votes that are entered into the system. So we have a record log of votes being entered in the system at a, you know, time point A, call it 10 a.m. Then we see later at 10:14, the votes that were just entered are either shifted, they're moved, or they're taken away. And as we know about voting, you can't unvote. You can only put in one vote, and as the group of people collectively add in, and you have these, they're called batch updates, where you have a group of people that have just voted in that, you know, that recency or added into the system, you can only go positive here. And sure, there'll be some errors or some, you know, possibly a few removals here and there. And we see that in, you know, some cases where there's maybe a correction of 33 votes, giving out a number there. But the magnitude we saw here are, as you just mentioned, sometimes 20,000 individually, 30,000, up to over 100,000. So the type of, you know, magnitude and scale with, you know, the consideration for how important a vote is, not in a group of votes. The fact that this is occurring is just, it requires a very, very explicit and detailed explanation, not just sort of a verbal voiceover, but, you know, from a programming standpoint, you want to know exactly what was going on, why did this occur, what was the cause, and if it's unexplainable, then that right there, as you heard, it's unexplainable. You cannot move forward with this type of you know, certification or processing, yeah. Because if this were financial, you know, you put your money in your bank account and all of a sudden you put in 30,000 deposit, we'll use that for, you know, correlation for a vote number. And then you come back the next day and see you've only got $10,000 in there. You've made no withdrawals.
And no one can explain where the $20,000 went, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd want to say, where did it go? You know, and you want to go to the bank and you'd want to, you know, escalate that issue to get a response. And, you know, we haven't had these types of responses, which you would get in industry. And if this were to happen in the industry, you know, it would become, you know, it'd be all over the news, because if a bank's just hiding or taking money from its patrons, that's really not the way you want to conduct a business, let alone an election.
Right. That's right.
But the thing is, John, look, you know, John, we called the bank manager, and the bank manager has said, that's just the way it is. Let's move on. You know, so like that's the problem that we have with that is like,
willing to accept and not be challenged, right? That's what these election officials are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've seen similar things. So let me share one with you that we found under a FOIA. In Fulton County, there was an urgent alert that went out to Fulton County from the Secretary of State's office saying there's a limitation to the data cards that we previously didn't know on voting machines. And if a voting machine gets to 10,000 votes, it can't count any more than 10,000. So you got to crack open the machine, take out the card, put a new card in, and then you store the other card until the end of the night. So that seems a reasonable thing, right? I guess no one thought that with this bigger turnout that any one machine would get 10,000 votes. And they thought, well, we're getting to that number. We better warn people. Except in Fulton County, they started cracking open the machines and taking them out when they reached 3,000 votes, not at the 10,000. So why would you need to take them out 7,000 votes ahead of the data card limit? This is not in dispute. It's on the record for the Fulton County election clerk. So, you know, these things went on and no one can give us an explanation. You found a lot of them. I think at the top line, right, when you look back, I want to take a couple of big points. We've been hearing all throughout the COVID crisis, you got to trust the science, right? You got to trust the science. Medical and bioengineers do their science, and we should trust the best science. data. You took science here, right? This isn't some hocus pocus. This is the sort of science that a data expert like your instructors and the master's program right now, Dave, this you're following scientific data structure to make these conclusions, correct? You're not making hocus pocus here, right?
No, everything is tied back to the data. We've released all of our data. We have all of our programming and processes are in the spirit of transparency we're making available. We encourage everyone to look at and replicate what we've done because we believe that the more people that can access and review this, the better. So that's sure. why, yeah, absolutely. This is all based on logical sequential processes that we put into place on our side.
This isn't hidden in the suitcase. It's out for everyone to, you know, data peer review, do what you need to do. That's one of its strengths. I want to always like to say, what are the limitations of? So one limitation is you are not, by your own acknowledgement, you're not making conclusions what happened, right? Who's responsible? You're just identifying all the instances in a data line, a data timeline, where irregularities occurred that should be investigated. So this is like the predicate for a criminal investigation at the FBI, but you're not really assigning blame yet. You're just saying each of these moments need to be investigated and explained for us to have greater trust in the election. Is that right?
Well, yeah, you know, John, it's kind of like, right, you know, we're looking at a house, right? It's got the windows smashed and, you know, all the furniture missing inside. And we're just saying something happened here. We don't know who went in there and stole things, but we have these indications. Like you go in and you see the carpet indentations where there were once, you know, something there. It might have been a chair or whatever like that. But, you know, we see the indications that there were things in there that did happen. And these things, this is a, you know, this is something where we're going to, for instance, you know, make an insurance claim on it. And then they're just saying, well, you know, everything's fine here. In fact, they didn't even come and take a look at the house. And they say that we're not allowed to enter the house and see, inspect everything like that. You can only look through the window because it's in public view. And that's kind of like what we're at here, where they won't give us the actual data set from the Secretary of State. So we had to then go find a way that was publicly available to get the same data that the Secretary of State is running. And that's the key thing. So, I mean, they've really put us through a difficult process in figuring out how can we prove something without actually being able to issue a warrant or subpoena or anything like that, you know?
In law enforcement terms, we might say that what you just did was create probable cause for a full-scale investigation. You know, broken window and an alarm going off in the house would suggest maybe there was a break-in, right? You have found that level of evidence where now either gives an officer the right to go inside or to get a warrant. You've created a document that is, you know, a really probable cause document. Is that a fair way to look at this? Am I laymanning it too much, or is that a good way to look at it?
I think that's the perfect way to put it because it's something that is only indicating that if you don't investigate this, that you are letting something possibly greatly damaging happen. And without that investigation, without any further, you know, it's just, it warrants further investigation. That's the best way you could put it.
Yep. And then I was
verifying.
Yeah.
I was just going to add too. I mean, you had mentioned earlier. Absolutely. This is sort of system agnostic. We're not talking about any one particular system.
Right.
We're looking at the data. So we're not saying it was this particular screwdriver that went in, you know, Jimmy opened the window and was able to get in that way. We're not saying anything like that. We're just saying we have the logs, the systems, the data, and that's all we're speaking to. And from that, that's enough to, as we've said, bring out these insights that warrant a detailed explanation.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I would add, though, is like if you liken this to, for instance, Enron, right? If they had been given the type of audit logs that we've given to the public and also to, you know, certain legislators, even state legislators as well, if we had given up all this data to them, right, in the case of Enron, they would have seized all the computers, they would have started, you know, putting people in detention and interrogating them because it's such a severe amount of indication of fraud. And
yeah, that's the thing is that couple dozen instances. Yeah. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of questionable data points or data actions over the course of a 12-hour day in four or five states, right? It's in the hundreds of thousands.
We're talking about this exists across at least 33 states of things that we need to investigate. The problem is that from an analysis standpoint, you know, we're a really small group of folks that got together that just, you know, do this. And, you know, we're very careful about the data we put out there. So when that's the case, it takes us a long time to analyze and to, you know, come up, you know, toss things to debate amongst each other about why certain things are, and to really form a solid analysis that we feel like we can each represent the data with, you know, publicly, as this is how the election actually occurred. And without without that kind of debate, you know, essentially inside of our team, we're having the debate that people who are for this candidate or against this candidate should be having publicly, but only one side is saying anything.
Pretty remarkable. Yep, and it's like the witnesses are taking the fifth here. They won't let us inside and really answer the questions. Their answer is, trust us, we're the election experts, so trust us. But you've put a lot of data out there. Now, one other limitation I want to get to, you haven't yet had the chance to go back and see if these anomalies occurred in prior elections, which would be interesting, I think, long-term. Is that something you might do in the future if you can get more resources?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just to add too, there is other data. We've been focusing, you know, our efforts, you know, time is an asset right now, so we wanted to focus on these high impact locations. But there are down ballot data sources available. There are other levels of analysis that we can do after we take care of, you know, what's most important now. So yeah, going back in time, looking down ballot, rectifying all of these issues is going to be something that will need to be done going forward. Yeah,
This is a nonpartisan effort in the sense of like, look, you know, if a Democrat legitimately won a seat, I want that Democrat to sit in that seat. If a Republican legitimately won a seat, I want that Republican to sit in the seat. And what I see is that the data is showing that there is no legitimacy to the people that are now taking office, that are being sworn in as we speak. And that is such a damning thing in terms of like being told to move on, and that, you know, looking at the data and seeing that there's no way this could possibly be this way. Now, you know, we could look at the data and people could start, you know, basically explaining some of these anomalies. And that conversation is where we need to start from. The problem is like, you know, we contact, for instance, or testify in Georgia. And what they do is they write an article on the Secretary of State's website that is talking about other people that testify, but they didn't mention a single thing about the data that we presented. You know, why?
Yeah.
All right, so it's easy to verify, you know.
We got a couple minutes left. I want to ask a really important question. And you guys, I really appreciate you. You've really done this in such a just a, there's no politics here. You're not trying to say Donald Trump won or Joe Biden won. You're saying the data sets that we want to trust because we're Americans and we pride ourselves on voting seem to have a lot of unanswered questions. But last question is, from where you are, you've identified all the things that need to be investigating. As data scientists, what's the proper next step? How, if people want to take this the next step, if you're a chairman of a Senate committee or a House committee or a state legislator, what are the next things that need to happen to investigate all of the leads that you've now generated from your data analysis?
I think, you know, I'll speak for myself and then let Dave speak on it. I just think from my end, you know, I believe that obviously there needs to be, you know, somebody to come in, maybe it's a U.S. attorney or something like that. Somebody needs to come in with a subpoena power. They need to say, hey, halt, what's going on? You know, seize the machines. Let's take a look at this stuff. Let's take a look at the servers. Let's take a look at all these things. And, you know, the problem is like, I want to talk to that person because maybe these processes are so complicated that they might not know and might not get the right machines at different points, you know? But the problem is that I also don't want to tip off people that want to be able to, you know, essentially destroy the audit trail even more so than it's already destroyed. So at this point, I would say, you know, we need to basically take our data, give it to somebody that has the ability to forensically audit all these pieces and figure out what actually happened. Now, the problem is you're also time constrained by the Constitution, which, you know, that important document, the Constitution.
The clock is ticking.
You know, absolutely. And so, you know, there's no, you know, we don't have recourse if certain things happen a certain way, far as if we find out other things that are wrong. And so, you know, we're kind of fighting against all these different things. And, you know, the answer is at this point is that people need to, one, call their legislators and let them know that you are listening and you're watching and that they're not going to take office if they're going to do it illegitimately and they're going to do it through cover up. You know, I think that's an important point. And I think some legislators are actually starting to hear that, which is why you're seeing legislators saying they're willing to oppose what's going on in the sixth. Because like you said, it's not about Donald Trump taking office. And we could only focus our efforts on the presidential election because that was the biggest kind of, this is the biggest part of this election that we could have enough time to look at. But, you know,
Super Bowl elections.
Exactly. We look at all elections. We want a fair and free system where everyone's vote counts for what it actually is. And it's one of the most sacred rights that we have as Americans. You know, and people say that, but we really mean that. And we put our time and effort to make sure that somehow we can get to something like that.
That's such a great point. All right, Justin, Dave, I can't thank you enough, first, for the work you've done, because I know this is tedious, hard work. I minored in statistics in college, and then I did exit poll supervision for the Associated Press for a long time, and data work is hard work. Your brain hurts some days when you're done. This is important work, and I think also you've done such a good job of explaining to us lay people what you found and what's there, and we really wish you well in the future endeavor on this. Keep us up to date. We want to stay in touch with what you're doing over the next few weeks and months.
Great. Thank you. Much, I just want to say, too, we've got a fantastic team that we, you know, just up and down, horizontally, vertically, a lot of great skill sets that are able to make this happen.
You sure do. I've been able to learn a lot about it in the last couple of days. Folks, you've been listening to Justin Mealy and Dave LeBue. They have been leading the Data Integrity Group on an extraordinary and interesting scientific analysis of voting data in America. Some really important red flags that they have raised for us to be investigated. Now the question is, will members of Congress, will state legislators, will the FBI and others take a look at this and give us the level of answers and confidence we need for future elections? Big question to be answered in the days ahead. Fellas, thanks again. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we'll be back in a second to wrap things up for the day. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, you heard two pretty extraordinary interviews, chock full of information and detail, firsthand participants in the history that's unfolding in America. And I hope you enjoyed that. Tomorrow we'll be back. I hope to have a member or two who's on the floor involved in the electoral process to weigh in. We'll get that done if we can. And we'll have other news and breaking news. Stay tuned. I hope to, tonight on Just the News, give you a little summary of the most cogent irregularities that are not in question, meaning they're not in doubt. These things happen. It's not, no one can dispute it. There are finality to them. So that when tomorrow you hear there was no irregularities, nothing that would change the election, you'll be armed at least with the facts to make up your own mind. That's all I want to help you do. We're going to get that done tomorrow on tomorrow's podcast, hopefully hear from someone on the front lines. I bet you we'll bring in our congressional correspondent at Just the News as well. He's fantastic. Nick does a lot of our great work, Nick Ballasy, and we'll have him here as well. So, big day tomorrow. Tune in. We'll be giving you breaking updates throughout the day. Until then, have a blessed night with your family. Happy New Year. God bless you. God bless America. You've been listening to John Solomon Reports from Just the News.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.